Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be looking at how God saved the godly as we turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 6, verse 1. So let's follow along as Pastor Chuck Smith continues with the story of Noah.
Men were multiplying upon the face of the earth, and the daughters were born to them. And the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they choose. Now it would appear that the sons of God here is a reference to angels, to fallen angels. Though we may not understand it completely, it would appear that there was a cohabiting between fallen angels and women. And the product, of course, was giants from this genetic engineering. And so it was a time of abnormal sexual activity. The Lord said, "My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. God is not probably there putting a limit on age, so much as he is declaring that in 120 years, he's going to bring his judgment and wipe out the earth unless there is a repentance, unless there's a change. And it was probably 120 years from this time that God brought his judgment. His days are numbered, God is saying. He's got 120 years. Now, there were giants on the earth in those days, the byproducts of the genetic engineering and the cohabiting with the sons of God and the daughters of men. And also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men and they bore children to them, they were the mighty men who were of old, the Nephilims, the men of renown. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. The Bible tells us that whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. If you sow to your flesh, you're going to have your flesh reap corruption. If you sow to the Spirit, you're going to reap life everlasting. But, God help us, every place you go, there are things that sow to your flesh. That was the condition that existed when God said, "My spirit will not always strive with man. It's enough. I've had it." This interest in Satanism, this abnormal sexual activity, the evil of the imagination of man's hearts. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it was grievous in his heart. He was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, "I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and animal, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them." But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. In the midst of a wicked and a perverse generation, one man stood out, Noah. He found grace in the eyes of the Lord. By faith, Noah walked with God. And this is the genealogy or the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. That is, probably referring to a pureness. In other words, there was no admixture with these sons of God and daughters of men. There was a pure strain here. The whole world was becoming corrupt by the abnormal sexual relationships and genetic engineering. But here was a pure line. He was pure in his generations. Noah walked with God, and he begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And so conditions that had resulted out of the breakdown of the family, marriage and divorce, marrying and giving in marriage, the breakdown of the family unit, and the social chaos, violence, and corruption filling the earth. So God looked on the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth." So make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and outside with pitch. The word translated pitch is the Hebrew word kofar. It is the same word translated later as atonement, as the blood of the lamb would make a kofar for the sins, a covering for the sins. So the ark was to be covered inside and out with this kofar. Probably a resin base kind of a pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits. Generally, a cubit is thought to be approximately 18 inches, the distance from your elbow to the tip of your finger. Now, they had the span, which was the length from your thumb to your finger, and so you would measure out so many spans and so many cubits. And that was a very simple and quick way of measurement. 300 cubits would translate into about 450 feet. So half again as long as a football field. It was to be 50 cubits wide or 75 feet wide, and the height 30 cubits or 45 feet. There were to be three decks, and so that means the height within each deck was probably 15 feet. As far as volumetric capacity, it was 1,400,000 cubic feet. You could take a 522 boxcars that they haul livestock on today and fit them in the ark. 522 boxcars. Now, in a boxcar, they can put 124 sheep, which means that he could have had 125,000 sheep in that ship. But he only had seven pair. Because they were of the clean animal, and seven pair of each clean animal, one pair of the unclean animal that went into the ark. But, of course, he didn't have to take the fish into the ark. They could survive the flood. There were certain birds that it would not be necessary to take them into the ark. Those birds that are adapted to the water, they could have survived. But of the species, now he didn't have to take all, you know, a bunch of dogs in there. All he had to have is one pair of dogs. He didn't have to have, you know, the dachshunds and the Samoyeds and the various types of dogs, but just one pair of dogs. You have the species, the dog family, you have the cat family, and just one pair of each species that were brought into the ark. With 1,400,000 cubic feet of space, or enough for 522 livestock cattle cars that they have on trains, there would have been sufficient room for a pair of all of the major species of animals that we have on the earth today. It is quite possible that the dinosaurs didn't make it, and that is what accounts for the extinction of the dinosaurs. Now, our minds have been conditioned by the evolutionary teachings that we have had in our various classes through high school and college, as we've studied geology and anthropology and biology and all. And our minds have been so mentally conditioned to the evolutionary hypothesis that we somehow believe that the dinosaurs became extinct some 300 million years ago. I saw a picture in the paper just this last week of some paleontologist who was examining the skeleton of a little dinosaur. And according to the article, the skeleton of the dinosaur that he was examining was the oldest dinosaur that's ever been discovered. They say that every time they find a new skeleton. While I was living in Tucson, I had a very interesting man, Dr. Albro, who took a liking to me. He had been a professor of anthropology and of ancient history at the University of Minnesota. And at that time, one of the archaeology classes at the University of Arizona was conducting some diggings outside of Tucson, and they announced that they had discovered the oldest skeletons of Indians ever found, and they were estimated to be some 10,000 years old or something, you know. And I said, "What about this, Dr. Albro, the age of these bones that they're discovering and all? You know, how do they really determine the age?" He said, "You want to know the truth?" I said, "Of course." He said, "All right." He said, "Let us assume that you and I are out here digging through the dirt and excavating a site that was once an Indian village." He said, "If we come across a skeleton, and if I, as a archaeologist and all, examine that skeleton, if I say, well, that Indian must have lived probably 3,000 years ago, and he was so old when he died, and he died as a result of a skull fracture because, you know, you can see where his skull was bashed and so forth." He said, 3,000 years, they've already discovered Indians 3,000 years old. So if I announce the discovery of this skeleton, who's going to pay any attention? They've already got him 3,000 years old. So he said, "I have to find out what is the oldest claim for the skeletons they have found so far. And then I've got to make mine a few years older than that, because then the newspapers will pick it up and it becomes news, because now you found the oldest one." And he said, "It's all a big hype to get the newspapers to report it so that you can attract money for your further excavations." And so when I saw this picture of this guy examining this little dinosaur, and it said, "The oldest dinosaur yet discovered," I thought, "Oh man, they're still at the same game, you know." But dinosaurs were probably not taken on the ark, but dinosaurs did coexist with man, as is plainly evident there at the Paluxy River in Texas, where every day they are uncovering more and more fossilized footprints of dinosaurs and men side by side, parallel, and in some places the man's footprint crosses into the dinosaur's track, and he's left his footprint right in the middle of the dinosaur's track. Do you know that some of the archaeologists and paleontologists have tried to destroy that site? Because you see, according to the evolutionary hypothesis, that can't be. That's destructive. And so men who are intent upon keeping God out of the scene, rationalizing for the existence of man without God, are trying to destroy the clear evidence that destroys completely the hoax and the lie that they've been trying to foster onto the gullible public. Now, not all scientists and evolutionists are hucksters. Some of them are very sincere, but they are sincerely deceived. They are beginning with false presuppositions, and their conclusions are all based upon a certain presuppositional base, of course, that evolution is a scientifically proved fact and that the Earth is 12 billion years old, and so they try to interpret all of the evidence with that presuppositional base. And thus they've got things all confused. Lyell, who was the father of the uniformitarianism concept from which the evolutionary hypothesis was born, Lyell visited the United States and visited the Niagara Falls and saw the gorge that's been created as Lake Erie drops over and forms then Lake Superior. And as he examined the gorge created by the Niagara Falls, and he talked to the people back in 1797 who were living near the area, they told him at that time that the falls were receding at about 4 feet a year. But that didn't fit with his hypotheses, and so he went back and told the world that the falls were receding at 1 foot a year. And so that 30,000-foot gorge then took 30,000 years to form, and that fit more with his theories of uniformitarianism. However, since 1797, and he called attention of the world to that gorge, they have been measuring it, and they found that it does recede at the rate of 4.5 feet per year since 1797, and that the inhabitants of the area were more correct than he. But at the earlier recession of the glacial ice that once formed the waters of the lakes, the flow of water was probably greater in those earlier years, and so it is safe to assume that the erosion rate in earlier years was greater than it was today because of the greater volume of water that was pouring over it in the earlier period of the glacial recession. Now, at 4.5 feet per year, it makes the beginning of the creation of the Niagara Falls something like 5,000 to 6,000 years ago. Which is quite interesting because now we're coming close to the time of the flood. So the flood can very easily account for a lot of the coal deposits, the mammoths frozen in the ice in the Siberian tundra, with the various upheavals and the lack of a real pattern in a geological column. God commanded him to make the ark. He makes a window above the ark and probably all the way around the top, 18 inches. Of course, with all those animals, you'd like some pretty good ventilation. And he set the door of the ark in the side. You'll make it with the lower, second, and third decks. And behold, God said, I myself am bringing the flood of waters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all of the flesh, which is the breath of life, and everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark, and your sons and your wife, your sons' wives with you. Every living thing of all flesh you shall bring, two of every sort, into the ark. Keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds after their kind, animals after their kind, creeping things of the earth after its kind. Two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. Will come to you. God put in the animals just sort of an instinctive kind of a thing that brought them to the ark and to Adam. And you shall take for yourself of all of the food that is eaten. Gather it to yourself. It will be for food for you and for them. Noah did all according to all that God commanded him, so he did. Actually, remember, he had to have enough food to feed all the animals and feed himself for about a year. But still, there's plenty of room in the ark for it all. If you want to just sit down and really figure it out, cubic feet-wise and so forth, he had sufficient room.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse study of Genesis in our next lesson, as we continue to learn more about the Ark and the Flood. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. And we'll have all the contact information in just a moment. Now, as we close out today's program, we'd like to share with you a great resource filled with encouragement and application geared to the teenagers of today. It's called Standing Up in a Fallen World, and this book by Pastor Chuck Smith addresses very specific and direct questions, such as, do you have what it takes to abstain from the immorality of our culture? Would you stand up for Jesus Christ in a group of complete strangers? What about a group of your closest friends? We all know it takes a lot to follow Christ with a sincere heart, and Pastor Chuck Smith provides the youth of today encouragement as he teaches from the book of Daniel about a young man who took a stand for righteousness in a time when he could have lost his life. So if you've been looking for a special resource for the special teenager in your life, order a copy of Standing Up in a Fallen World, a powerful message for teenagers by Pastor Chuck Smith. And you can order it now by calling 1-800-272-WORD. Phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse venture through the book of Genesis. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
May the Lord be with you and watch over you during the week, and may God keep you unspotted from this evil world in which we live. As Paul said to Timothy, my son Timothy, flee ungodly lust. There is so much to stimulate you in this world in which we live, to start to feed the mind and to lead it into fantasies of unrighteousness and unreality. It's so easy that our imaginations be directed toward evil and evil things. Keep your mind pure. Keep your heart pure. Walk with God in close fellowship. Give no place to the enemy. Walk in purity and righteousness. And thus may you have a glorious week walking in the Spirit. For they that are in the Spirit shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. May you be in the Spirit. In Jesus' name.
Kids, I've got some exciting news. Pastor Chuck has written a book just for you. It's called The Story of Noah. Just listen.
Noah guided two of each species of animals into the ark, and he probably carried baby dinosaurs onto the boat because grown dinosaurs would have been too big.
It's so much fun to read along with Pastor Chuck and learn about God's Word. And as a gift, each book contains an audio CD of Pastor Chuck actually reading the story of Noah, so your kids can read along. Order your copy. Call The Word for Today at 800-272-WORD. Or to see a sneak preview of the story of Noah, visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. Again, the number to call is 800-272-9673.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.